So how does the bodhisattva become irreversible? It's something which won't concern us for a very long while, really, but at least let us see what the scriptures have to say. Broadly speaking, the bodhisattva becomes irreversible by the realization of great emptiness, maha shunyata. You may remember that we dealt with this to some extent last week. And last week we saw that maha shunyata, great emptiness, is the third of the four principal kinds of shunyata, emptiness or voidness. There's first of all the emptiness of the conditioned, the fact that the conditioned is empty of the characteristics of the unconditioned. Then there's the emptiness of the unconditioned, in the sense that the unconditioned is empty of the characteristics of the conditioned. And then there's great emptiness, which is the emptiness of the very distinction, the non-ultimate validity of the very distinction between conditioned and unconditioned, so that they're both reduced to one non-dual reality, transcending both nirvana and samsara. And then, finally, there's emptiness of emptiness, shunyata, shunyata, in which, wherein, even the idea, the conception, even the experience of emptiness itself vanishes away. The finger, however transparent, disappears, and you've only got the full moon with nothing pointing to it. Now, in what way is irreversibility connected with the realization of great emptiness? What is great emptiness, if one can say at all? Great emptiness is, as we've seen, essentially a realization of the emptiness of the distinction between conditioned and unconditioned. When the experience of great emptiness dawns, one realizes, one sees clearly that neither the conditioned nor the unconditioned is really a separate, independent reality. One sees that the distinction between the two, that this is conditioned, this is unconditioned, this is the world, that's nirvana. One sees that this distinction, useful, though it may be provisionally, at the beginning, for practical purposes, is not ultimately valid. That when you go deeply into the conditioned, you encounter the unconditioned. That when you go deeply into the unconditioned, you encounter the conditioned. So therefore, with the experience of great emptiness, one gives up the distinction of conditioned, unconditioned, reduces them, as it were, to one common, non-dual reality. Now, spiritual individualism, into which there's always the danger, up to the eighth bhumi, of the bodhisattva slipping back. Spiritual individualism is based on dualistic thinking. Spiritual individualism is based on the idea that there is an unconditioned up there, out there, separate from the conditioned, to which one can aspire, to which one can escape, as it were, by oneself. So that when one realizes great emptiness, or when the bodhisattva realizes great emptiness, he realizes that it is not so. He awakens, as it were, from dualistic thinking as though from a dream. And he sees that all this talk of conditioned and unconditioned and getting from this to that, it's all unreal. There's no such thing. He sees it quite clearly. He sees through all this. It's just like a game that he's been playing, this getting out of the conditioned into the unconditioned, whether to go by himself or whether to take others with him, and whether to come back or not to come back or stay there. He sees it all a dream, it's all a make-believe, and he wakes up from this dream of dualistic thinking into the light, into the reality of the one mind, the non-dual reality, whatever one might like to call it. And he sees that in its ultimate depth, the condition is the unconditioned. There's no line, no division between them whatsoever. He sees, in the words of the Heart Sutra, that rupa is shunyata and shunyata is rupa. And he sees no difference between them whatsoever. So there's nothing to escape from, and there's nowhere to escape to. And he sees the utter absurdity, therefore, of the very idea of individual emancipation. And in this way, by realizing the import of great emptiness, in this way, the bodhisattva becomes irreversible. He can't fall back to individual emancipation because he sees there's no individual emancipation to fall back to. Now, the scriptures give us, especially the perfection of wisdom scriptures give us, various signs of irreversibility. If anyone wants to know whether they've become irreversible or not, well, here's your opportunity. And we're told by the perfection of wisdom scriptures that the irreversible bodhisattva, if asked about the nature of the ultimate goal, always includes in his reply a reference to the compassion aspect of that goal and of the spiritual life. He doesn't speak just in terms of nirvana, just in terms of individual emancipation. He always includes a reference to compassion, a reference to other sentient beings. And in this way, he's known to be irreversible, whether he studied the perfection of wisdom sutras or not. And then the irreversible bodhisattva, we're told, has all sorts of archetypal dream experiences. In a dream, he sees himself, as it were, as a Buddha, preaching the Dharma, surrounded by bodhisattvas. Or he may see himself practicing the paramitas, and we're told he may especially see himself sacrificing his life, having his head cut off, and feeling quite happy about it in the dream, not afraid or upset at all. And these are other signs that he has become irreversible. And finally, another sign of irreversibility is that the irreversible bodhisattva never wonders whether he's irreversible or not.